We'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 11, Text 21. Chapter 11 is called as the symptoms of living entities. The symptoms of living entities. The text goes as follows. Evam jigyasaya apohya nanatva bhramam atmani uparameta virajam manomai arpya sarvage evam jigyasaya apohya nanatva bhramam atmani uparameta virajam manomai arpya sarvage evam jigyasaya apohya nanatva bhramam atmani uparameta virajam manomai arpya sarvage.
Evam jigyasaya apohya
evam jigyasaya apohya
nanatva bhramam atmani
nanatva bhramam atmani
uparameta virajam
uparameta virajam
manomai arpya sarvage
manomai arpya sarvage.
Jigyasaya, by analytic study.
Apoya,
giving up.
Nanatva,
of material variety.
Brahmam,
the mistake of rotating.
Atmani,
in the self.
Uparameta,
one should cease from material life. Virajam,
pure.
Mana,
the mind.
Mayi,
in me.
Arpya, fixing.
Sarvage,
who am all pervading.
Translation.
Coming to this conclusion of all knowledge, one should give up the false conception of material variety that one imposes upon the soul and thus sees one's material existence. The mind should be fixed on me since I am all pervading. Coming to this conclusion of all knowledge, One should give up the false conception of material variety that one imposes upon the soul, and thus sees one's material existence. The mind should be fixed on me, since I am all pervading. So I'll read some sections from the purport, because the purport again is very huge. The words Nanatva Brahmam in this verse, that is the second line, and that is the key line in this verse. The words Nanatva Brahmam in this verse indicates false identification with the gross and subtle material bodies. The word Brahmam indicates a mistake. It can also mean wandering or rotating. The conditioned living entity, because of his mistake of falling into illusion, is wandering through a succession of material bodies, sometimes appearing as a demigod and sometimes as a worm in stool. So here it is mentioned that even birth as a demigod is because of a mistake. The word Uparameta means that one should stop such fruitless wandering and fix one's mind on the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, who is the true object of everyone's love. Such a conclusion is not sentimental, but is the result of keen analytical intelligence, which is called as Jigyasaya in the verse. Thus, after elaborately explaining to Uddhava many aspects of analytic knowledge, the Lord now comes to the ultimate conclusion, Krishna consciousness, pure love of Godhead. Without such love, there is no question of eternally fixing one's mind on the Lord. Without such love, there is no question of eternally fixing one's mind on the Lord. All of these illusions are called Brahma or mistakes, but such ignorance can be eliminated at once by chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाखदामयं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यश्च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गौरभक्तवृन्द. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम. वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. Basic import of this verse is about the mind. As we heard in the purport, chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is the only process of fixing the mind on Krishna. It is said, or rather, we all are aware, that mind is the subtle body which is within the gross body. And through the mind, we actionize the process of thinking, feeling and willing. In that sense, the mind is the connecting interface between the body and the soul. Now it is mentioned that the primary cause of all our bondage in this material world is upadhis. That's why Srila Rupa Goswami gives the verse Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmulam rishikena rishikesha sevana mukti ruchyate in Nectar of Devotion. Upadhi means false identification. Now, the mind, it is mentioned mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshaya, which means that the mind itself is the cause of bondage as well as liberation. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshaya. Bandha means bondage, mokshaya means liberation. The same mind is the cause of both. So therefore, the mind is the instrument through which all false conception of material variety, as is mentioned in this verse, all false conception of material variety and designations is imposed upon the soul through the agency of the mind. Unfortunately, modern day yoga, which includes aerobics, pranayama and so on and so forth, they don't address the problem directly. If you go to any aerobics program, they'll call it as yoga, but at the end of the day, again, it's only the body which benefits. The mind doesn't benefit with that. If at all, seeing the scantily clad body of the ladies who are doing, the aerobic exercise, the mind gets further agitated. And they come openly on television like that. So, definitely there is no mind control possible there. Mind will get more disturbed. When we talk about higher classes, like for example pranayama classes and whatever, they are good, but at the end of the day, if you ask someone, what have you achieved after coming out of the class, he'll say, my blood pressure has gone down, my diabetes is in control, all that. But, and he'll say, as long as I'm doing it, I get some peace of mind. I sit and do that pranayama, because the body is very relaxed. But then after 2 days, when you stop doing the process, again the mind goes back to its old ways. So therefore, aerobics, gymnastics, pranayama, etc. are primarily aimed at the gross body and not at the subtle body. The gross body is the prime beneficiary of all these programs. Therefore, the sole solution is given here is fixing the mind on Krishna. That is recommended here. But fixing the mind on Lord Krishna is easier said than done for people whose minds are conditioned and disturbed. Manda sumanda mataya manda bhagya hi upadrutaha. In Kali Yuga, everyone's minds is disturbed. People are willing to pay huge sums to attend all these vipassana meditation and these gymnastics courses, aerobics courses, and they get ripped off for 1 hour to practice all this. But they are still willing to pay and go to these places. And if all this fails, people are still willing to go to the psychiatrist and pay him something for the satisfaction of the mind. And if that also doesn't work, they get admitted to the hospital. Sita Mataji tells me about all her patients very regularly. All the patients who are mentally disturbed, she deals with them day in and day out. All kinds of patients are there. One of her patients has a habit of eating anything that he sees, which means if he sees some plastic, he will just eat that. Anything he was eating. So how to control that person? Can't do anything. So this is the mind. So ultimately we end up in hospital if all the other things do not work. But when we say that in this Hare Krishna temple, we are offering free treatment for the mind, people don't want to come. They don't have time. That is the problem. Because most of the people, especially since I come from India, I can say that most of the people since childhood have got a distorted idea of what to expect from a temple. People are confused about the purpose of going to a temple. If you ask somebody why you are going to a hospital, generally he is very clear. If your car is having a problem, you will not go to the hospital and say engine is not working. Very clear. Okay, no, I will go to the car mechanic if that is the problem. If you ask why are you going to school and college, they are very clear. I want to have a degree, therefore I want to earn.
But if you ask someone, why are you going to the temple, 10 people will give 10 different answers. If you ask the students why you are going to a temple, either exam is coming or exam results are happening, or exam results have come and I have failed, or exam results have come and I have passed. If you ask a grihastha, a householder, why he is coming to the temple, usually the answers will be, so that I get a pay hike, my boss is troubling me in office, there is unemployment, so many reasons. Okay. So, and the temples also know this, our psychology, the temples also know, the modern day temples. So they have a wonderful methodology for cheating us. When we go there, they'll say, okay, if you pay 50 rupees, then we will remove this dosha or mistake. Okay. And if you pay 100 rupees, then you'll get special something. And if you pay 200 rupees, then something else. So they have very nicely, they swindle us of our wealth. And therefore, people have lost faith in the modern day temples. In fact, people are so confused that they cannot understand how a temple can help them regain their mental and spiritual health. However, in a genuine temple as ours, and which we can confidently say because of our own experience with the temple of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada has equipped and empowered us to not only help ourselves in bringing our mind under control, but also in sharing this mechanism of controlling the mind with the whole world. So this mechanism of mind control is very important to understand. It is mentioned that our state of mind is reflected in our consciousness, which in turn directly dictates our attitude. Whatever is the mind, consciousness will be like that. And whatever the consciousness, our attitude will be like that. Whatever our attitudes, our perception will be like that. And whatever our perception, our behavior will be like that. And whatever our behavior, our memory will be like that. And whatever our memory, our thoughts will be like that. So this whole package is called as consciousness. Attitude, perception, behavior, memory, thoughts. And then which leads to actions thereafter. So this cycle has to be understood. This mechanism of the mind has to be understood. Of how everything starts with attitude. So Srila Prabhupada went to Africa to preach. Africa, as all of you know, is a very dangerous country. So Srila Prabhupada landed in Africa, and next day morning Srila Prabhupada went to see, to take some of his clothes. And he found that his clothes have been stolen. So Srila Prabhupada said, okay, fine. So he came and he had some spare clothes. So he took those and he sat down to give Srimad Bhagavatam class. And to his amazement, he found out that the clothes were worn by his disciples. So this is Africa. So in Africa, in the place where Srila Prabhupada was preaching, it was a general attitude that you can pick up anything and wear. That was a common attitude there. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada began his instructions. His first instruction to his disciples was, you must not steal your guru's clothes. So he had to change their attitudes and perceptions first. And only then their behavior could be changed. Also, in addition to four regulative principles, no meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, Srila Prabhupada had to add another fifth regulative principle in Africa, which was, do not catch flies and eat in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Because this was another habit which the people in Africa had. They'll just catch something and pop it in their mouth. Prabhupada said, don't do that. He didn't say, offer it to Krishna and very high standard at that time. So these attitudes and perception creates behavior, behavioral patterns, and behavior creates memories and then thoughts in the mind thereafter, and then we are forced to engage in activities one after another. For example, if we have a close friend who has been very close to me, and then one day I hear that friend was involved in some scandal. I just heard about this. He's a very close friend of mine. And then, you know, this fellow has swindled money from someone. And then on that day, after I hear this, the friend comes to me and says, hey, do you have $10 with you? So immediately what happens, I forget everything that he was my friend. And immediately the top of the mind recall is that, oh, this fellow, you know, he's trying to rip me off $10. Because somewhere I heard at some point in time, from somewhere I got this information that, you know, this fellow has done something like this. So therefore, attitudes change because of information and perception. And this will dictate memories and thoughts with respect to that person. In this way, we have been accumulating millions of thoughts. Every moment, we have been accumulating millions of thoughts which are getting deposited in the repository of the mind. Therefore, we need a quick process of mind purification, which accumulates all these thoughts at a rate faster than what we can even process. Okay. So therefore, that process is only the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Because Hare Krishna Mahamantra is much faster than what the mind can process. So Srila Prabhupada describes that the cure for the problems of the mind is a deep science, and there is no room for speculation here. If we don't follow the Shastric process of mind control, then it is very difficult to cure the mind. And there is an interesting example here. For example, I don't know how many of Brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis and others have faced this problem. But sometimes we make a resolve that, okay, I'll come for Mangala Arati in the morning. And then we set the alarm at 4 o'clock. And when we set the alarm at 4 o'clock, obviously the alarm will ring at 4 o'clock. So alarm rings. And then we say that, yeah, definitely, now the alarm is ringing, so definitely I'm going to go for Mangala Arati. So you put the alarm off. And then you start thinking that, yes, anyway, I'm going to get up. Just 3 more minutes, that's all. No problem, I'll get up. And then 3 minutes happens, and then 4 minutes happens, and then you have a vague thing that, yeah, I'm just trying to get up now for Mangala Arati. And after that, what happens? As you are thinking about getting up for Mangala Arati, you get into a dream between 4 and 4:30. And because you have been thinking about Mangala Arati so vividly, you think that you have already gone for Mangala Arati, that I am taking bath. So in the dream, we are taking bath. In the dream, we have already changed clothes. In the dream, we have already entered the temple. The deity doors are opened. And in our dream, we are leading the kirtan. But in reality, what happens? Then you get up and it is already 5 o'clock. Then we realize that it was a dream. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam has this verse which says, Swapne Jagranam Yatha, seeing within the dream that I have woken up. So the process of mind control has to be practical. It cannot be, it has to be a Shastric process. It cannot be a speculative process. Therefore, when we talk of the mind problem, we are talking of actually waking up from our dream. Unless we take the right process, Srila Prabhupada says, we will simply feel that we have woken up and our mind is under control. But actually we will be sleeping if we don't take the Shastric process. For example, if, again, it's a question about sleeping. Sometimes when we sleep, we have nightmares. In our nightmare, we see a tiger chasing us. Okay. So we are running and the tiger has come from somewhere. So the tiger is chasing us. And the tiger is chasing us so vigorously and we are running and running. Of course, there is no logic in the dream. So sometimes we can even run faster than the tiger in a dream. So we are running, running somehow, and then we enter the tram, the tiger also enters the tram. Then we get down at Southern Cross station, and then we enter the train, and the tiger has also entered the train. And then the tiger is simply not leaving. After some time, you start sweating, and in the dream you are shouting, tiger, tiger, tiger. And then one of our friends, who is awake at that time, he is seeing us. Oh, why this fellow is shouting, tiger, tiger, tiger. Oh, maybe he is having a nightmare. That's why he is shouting, tiger, tiger, tiger. So what he does is, he takes a stick in his hand, he comes close to you, he lies down and goes to sleep. What is the logic? He says that when I sleep, I'll also get dream. In my dream, I'll take this tiger because his is also a dream, so I'm also dreaming. So in my dream, I'll go and finish his tiger and save him. So there are two people dreaming here and they are thinking that they will save one another. So this is the methodology of the speculative philosophers or the Mayavadis for controlling the mind, they think that by a philosophy which itself is based on illusion, they can convince somebody who is in illusion. Actually, there's only one thing that we have to do. Simply wake him up. That's all. That is a simple process. So most of our frustrations and anxieties are owing to misidentifications. And we have to wake up from these misidentifications. Our consciousness is currently identifying with the body. And therefore, we are caught up in the cycle of material attitudes, perception, behavior, memory, thoughts, actions, all performed under the three modes of material nature. Therefore, the solution is to change our mundane consciousness into spiritual consciousness. That's what Srila Prabhupada, that's what this purport talks about. Develop spiritual attitudes by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Develop behavior which is in tune with the true spiritual self, whereby all memories of previous sinful activities and consciousness are gradually erased and our thoughts become crystal clear in pure Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada says that the most important aspect is to take the medicine. We cannot just go to the doctor, tell all our pains, take a printout and then come back home. And then just keep the bottle lid tightly closed. In India sometimes the instructions are given. Keep the lid tightly closed. So some person was still sick. They asked why. He's saying instruction is keep the lid tightly closed. I have not taken the medicine. Therefore, bhakti is practical. This medicine is amply being distributed in the Hare Krishna temples. But people are not willing to take it. They will rather go to some speculative philosophers. So unless we take this medicine regularly, the symptoms of a conditioned mind will never leave us. The conditioned mind has got three symptoms. Okay. And we can see whether our mind is conditioned if we have any of these three symptoms. The first is called as to compare, comparison. The second one is called as to complain, to compare, to complain. And the third is to criticize. Compare, complain and criticize. So if any of us are suffering from any of these problems or all the above, then we can be sure that our mind is conditioned. In fact, this comparison is one of the reasons why newspapers are in a lot of sale. Because in newspapers, many of us like to read newspapers. In the newspapers, they are always, you know, comparing. When you read, you know, 10,000 people died in tsunami, 40,000 people died here, one gunman came to a school and killed so many students. And then you are amazed. Your own mind gives you congratulatory messages saying that you are safe. Very nice. So when we see that the whole world is miserable, then the mind gets some kind of a solace. Like that. Therefore, newspapers are very popular because newspapers always give bad news. So we congratulate our own mind and feel artificially happy for some time. So once somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada asked his disciples, what is the meaning of good morning? Everyone says good morning. Tomorrow Monday morning also in office they'll say good morning. There's nothing good about a Monday morning in office. But still everyone will say good morning. So Srila Prabhupada said, good morning simply means that nothing horrible has happened as yet. So we were talking about the first symptom of the mind, which is comparison. This comparison is the reason for all bitterness in the mind. And our minds are always infected. And that's why this comparison comes about. This comparison happens not only with regard to the pain, but even with regard to the treatment there is comparison. For example, in a hospital, sometimes in devotional life, Guru Maharaj will give one instruction to us. And he'll give a simple instruction to us. And then he'll give a much complicated instruction to somebody else. And then we are not happy with our spiritual master. Why my spiritual master gave me simple instruction? Why he gave him complicated instruction to my God brother? Does my spiritual master think that I am not up to it? So even when with regard to treatment, when spiritual master gives some treatments, and he knows why he is giving, intense instruction to somebody else. Maybe the person is more advanced to take such intense instruction. But then we compare even the treatment which spiritual master gives. Just like, for example, in a hospital, if somebody is having, you know, let's say flu, and then the person is just admitted to hospital, and then he sees an accident victim come next in the next bed, all bandaged, and you know, he's put here and there, and all doctors are attending to him more. Then this person says that, why, you know, my leg has not been put in a cast? Why only he is being given treatment like that, in the bandage? So this is like that. A comparison can happen on any platform. So we compare, and even if there is no problem, by comparison we will impose certain artificial things on our mind and be miserable. It's called as adhyatmic misery. Misery is because of one's own body and mind. One of the best examples or common examples of comparison is prasadam serving. So sometimes, even, you know, we had this festival, Balram Jayanti, and when we go up, you know, after Balram Jayanti, the first thing, you know, many of us, at least I do this, my mind is not under control. So sometimes you sit for prasadam and then your eyes go like this. Which means, have I got all the items the other person has got? Just you are comparing. Like that. This is the problem. So though a lot of prasadam is on our plate, but our mind will take us somewhere else. And then we want assurance. So when items are falling, one is more anxious to see what is falling on the other's plate. Or also the 7:30 Mahaprasadam which comes, the dry Mahaprasadam. Somebody is walking with cake, somebody is walking with samosa. And then we want to compare. So this comparison happens on various platforms. People compare education, talent, skills, wealth. On every platform there is comparison. In India, the root cause of all student anxiety is comparison. Now this comparison happens from the school level itself. I remember when I was a child, the school results, grade 1, grade 2, etc., it used to come through the postman. Postman is to bring our report card, like that. And then we knew, obviously in India, you can do anything with the postman. You can just, get around the postman and you can put your hand inside his mail and then take it out. Postman aya. And all the kids will run behind him. So typically what happens, in my building, all the ladies will come down, on the day that the postman is to bring the results. From the school they'll come to know, postman is bringing the results. All ladies will come with their children. And everybody will run towards behind the postman. And by the time the postman, enters the building, already, he is totally disheveled. And then people will pick up, and then they will, they will pick up, and before they see, they'll ask, how much your son got? And then they'll pick up, and if they find that their son has got something less, then they'll vanish from that place. But if they find that their son has got something more, they'll come and definitely make it a point to sympathize with you. Yeah, your son is. They'll be your best friend if your son is getting less marks than their son. So this is the mind. So, and this problem in India, and the child is also under immense pressure, because all the ladies in the building, everybody is looking at him. Oh my God, I only got 25th rank, and that fellow got 3rd rank. And immediately the mother will catch the child like this by the ear and come, I'll take care of you. In the house, we will talk. And then inside there will be some hammering going on. So this is how, the parents are also obsessed that their child should perform. And this comparison does not stop. This is, I'm talking specifically about India. I don't know about other countries. At university level also it does not stop. At university level also this comparison continues. In India, the best institute is called as IIT, Indian Institute of Technology. Out of lakhs and lakhs of people who appear for this entrance exam, only 2000 to 2500 get seats. Out of lakhs of people who apply. So the cream of the cream of the cream enter IIT. Now, obviously, if you enter IIT, how happy you will be? Yes. But no, sorry. IIT also has got suicides happening within the campus. Okay. In fact, I heard that in IIT, at least already you are in the cream of cream of cream. And there one person is a gold medalist in that college also. In that IIT. Like for example, our Radhesham Prabhu is there. Radhesham Prabhu, who is the president of ISKCON Pune Temple, he is a gold medalist inside that IIT. And now he is, of course, he joined as Brahmachari after IIT. And he's doing wonderful preaching in Pune. But he was the gold medalist. Even amongst all the IIT people, he's top. First rank. Like that. And then the second person gets a silver medal. Now, do you think it's easy to get a silver medal in IIT? But we have heard of a story where the silver medalist also he attempted suicide because he didn't get a gold medal. Even after entering IIT, even after coming in the top three ranks of IIT, still the mind tells you that why did I not get gold medal? There is no end to comparison. As long as we compare, our mind can never be satisfied. Now, we talked about childhood, we talked about university level. Even at PhD level also this comparison doesn't stop. We have the example of Brahmatirtha Prabhu in ISKCON. His Karmi name is Bob Cohen. I don't know how many of you have heard. Brahmatirtha Prabhu. So, Brahmatirtha Prabhu was attending a scientific conference once. And then he met one of his friends. And he took his visiting card. In that visiting card, it was written PhD BF. PhD BF. So he was wondering, what is this PhD BF? We have heard of PhD. What is PhD BF? So he called him by the side and asked him, what is this PhD BF you have written? He said, actually it is PhD but fail. He said, how can you carry such a visiting card? He was obviously shocked and he was exchanging the card with the scientific community. He said, this scientific community is so useless here that their own false ego permits them from asking me what is PhD BF because they think their ignorance will be exposed. So they think it's a big degree and they are aware of their degree. So he goes, so he said, but why do you have to do all this? He said, because I should get acceptance within the community. So I have to show that I am somebody special. Otherwise nobody will respect me in the community. In fact, most of the corporate HR policies of today, human resource policies by the HR department, they are also framed towards comparison. In fact, in my own company, it is no longer, it's no longer adequate to do your own job without any problems. If you do your own job without any problems, then it is called as met expectation. That's all. And promotion you will get only if you exceed expectations. Now, exceed expectation is something which is very subjective. So, even if you think you have exceeded expectation, your boss will prove it to you that you have not exceeded expectation. So, you are just chasing a mirage like that. And they'll make you work, work, work. Again, if we actually analyze our jobs, most of our stress doesn't come from work pressure, but from peer pressure. Because when the appraisal time comes, and when we see our subordinates go ahead of us, at that time, immense stress comes. Throughout the year, our work rarely bothers us. Because most of us are not into rocket science. Whatever jobs we do, I think we still are able to manage our jobs like that. But because of comparisons, peer pressure, this happens. This mentality of comparison, even after coming to devotional life, we carry. It is not unusual. Many times we find that even especially in the initial stages of devotional life, when kirtan is going on, we compare. Is my musical instrument louder than the other musical instrument? And we will find that the mind tells you play louder and louder. Your musical instrument, whether it's mridanga or kartalas. And then we play it so loudly and then we look, everybody should know that I am playing this musical instrument. And how nicely I am playing this. So this comparison attitude we bring even to devotional life. So Srila Prabhupada says that in devotional life, we have to perform things like in an orchestra. In an orchestra, if the trumpet fellow says, my instrument is not coming up, and suddenly, some nice song is going on, and then he starts blowing in between, saying that, I should get all the attention, then we can imagine what kind of discord will result from that. So each of us have to come in terms with our own abilities and limitations and play our role in a unique way. And wait patiently in the right consciousness and allow the Lord to reveal His plans for us. The most compared thing in the world is wealth. Most compared. The story is of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, he conquered the entire world. And then as a part of his quest, he came to India, which is the only place I think he had not conquered at that time. When he came to India, because of the mosquito problem in India, the mosquitoes got him and he got malaria. And when he got malaria, he couldn't do a dam with all his money. And there was no treatment for malaria at that time. So when he got malaria, he had to beat a hasty retreat. And it is said, what the biggest army in the world could not do to him, the mosquitoes of India did. Now, as he tried to retreat, as he reached Greece, the symptoms of malaria intensified. And he knew that my time is up now. I'll be leaving my body very soon. So he called all his people and told them, I have 3 wishes which you people need to fulfill. The first wish is that after my death, carry me in a palanquin. And he said, the people who should be at the 4 corners of my palanquin should be the 4 doctors who treated me. That is the first instruction. 4 doctors should carry my palanquin, all at each end. Number 2, as my palanquin is getting carried, you must throw jewels and gold coins in front of my palanquin. Just throw jewels and gold coins. The third thing is, when you are carrying me in the palanquin, don't put the curtains or the doors of the palanquin. Leave my hands outstretched like this. So people should see my hands from outside the palanquin. And obviously his followers asked him, this is a very unique request, please explain to us. What do you mean by this? So he said that I want to show the world that when that death can come even if you have the highest fame, wealth, name and all and so on and so forth. So I want to show to them that when death decides to come and grace you, no doctors can save you. That's why I want the 4 doctors to be there. Then I also want to tell them that whatever wealth that I have accumulated, the gold coins, the jewels, etc., they are all useless. They couldn't save me at the time of death. So they are useless. When you throw something, it's a metaphor for something which is useless. And then my hands outstretched outside my palanquin means that people are 100% sure that I am not carrying anything with me, what I earned in this lifetime. So this is the message that he wanted to give to the world. I spent all my energy to amass this wealth. Let the world see that when disease strikes you and death snares you, no doctor can save you. So when doctors are carrying the dead body, the message is very clear. So this anxiety for wealth always puts us in great agony. And it is a very critical principle. Once one rich man came to Srila Prabhupada and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I have so many factories in India. I have one in Jaipur and one in Rampur and one in Badlapur. And she said, Srila Prabhupada, I am fed up managing all these factories. I get no sleep in the night time. So Srila Prabhupada said, no problem. Give all your factories to us and go to sleep. Then he said, Swamiji, I wish to take leave now. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, give me your address. No, I'm not joking. Give me your address. We'll take care of that. Don't worry. He said, no. I'll give my address outside. When I'm leaving, I'll put it. Don't worry about it. I'll get back to you. He says, no, don't call me. I'll call you. That's what he said. And then Srila Prabhupada was laughing. He told his disciples, see how much this fellow is in anxiety because of the conception that he is the enjoyer of whatever he has earned. That's why all this anxiety comes. And Srila Prabhupada said, if he only knew how he can engage all this wealth in Krishna's service, if he had this kind of a mentality, he will not have this anxiety. Another platform of comparison is beauty. And we see every day in the tram. In fact, most of the days when I go to work, I see the common topic between all the ladies in Melbourne is who went to which pedicure and which manicure and what are the good places to dye your hair. And very intensely they are engaged. Of course, Prabhuji's may also be doing, but I haven't seen. I've seen more of Mataji's doing in Melbourne. So, to such a person, if they come to the temple and they hear from Srila Prabhupada that they are not the body, but they are the soul, then it gives them relief from all this anxiety. So, as is mentioned in the verse today, the only way of controlling this mind, which tends to compare, compare, and compare, is by taking to the process of devotional life. By taking to the process of devotional life, two things happen. The first thing we get is we become satisfied in our lives. Gradually it happens. It doesn't happen in one day. Gradually we tend to get a sense of deep satisfaction within. And there is an interesting quote here from one of the philosophers who said that satisfaction is like a shoe for the mind. A shoe is normally put on the leg. But he says that satisfaction is the shoe for the mind. Because if we are satisfied, if we put the shoe on our leg, and if we put the shoe of satisfaction on our mind, we can pass through all kinds of terrain. But because the shoe is on our leg, we are unaffected by that terrain. So the shoe of satisfaction brings deep peace and contentment, which is very difficult from constantly achieving which we don't have. So constantly pursuing what we don't have is not going to give us satisfaction. And the second thing which happens by devotional life is we generate a feeling of gratitude for whatever we have. These are two things which we have. So this is the first thing, first symptom of disturbed mind, which is comparison. The second one is called as complaining. This is another second symptom of conditioned mind. We complain usually because we don't know how the laws of karma are working in our lives. So we usually complain about what we are not getting. We complain about not getting what we want instead of being glad that we are not getting what we deserve. All of us have our own quota of suffering based on our karmas. But when we don't understand the law of karma, then we think that everything is unfair when misery strikes us, and therefore we begin to complain. There's an interesting example here of a child. When the child is usually very small and when the child falls sick, then the parents take the child to the doctor for an injection. Now I remember when I took my son for a doctor when we were in Bangalore, when he was, I think, in the first year. So when the parents take, they never tell the child that they are taking to a doctor for injection. They say that, no, let's just go out, we'll go to that uncle. And then, you know, doctor also will have some toys to show the child. So we take the child on all false hopes. So the child also trusts the parents. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And then the child comes. And then when he sits there, immediately when he sits in the thing and the doctor gives him one toy, but then immediately after that, two, three nurses come from there. And then the child realizes something is wrong because past experience is there of injection. Realizes something is wrong. And then, no, the nurses also tell him, no, no, beta, nothing will happen. Everything is fine. And when the child hears this, he gets even more, you know, petrified. And then he starts looking at his parents now. The parents are going to save me. And when the parents also say the same thing, no, 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 nothing will happen. Just uncle and auntie, that's all. And then when they hear that, then the child gets totally bewildered. So he gets a very bad experience. But the same child, when the child who has gone through this, when the child grows up and becomes a youth or a big man, then the same child goes voluntarily and pays money for this injection to get cured. Voluntarily the child goes. He is willing to pay. Okay, I'll give you $100, doctor, but please give me this injection. My fever is not going down. So therefore, it is mentioned that the experience of pain has not changed. The pain is the same, but our vision has changed. Our maturity has changed here. We know that this pain is now for my protection against higher pains that otherwise I would have had to endure. So therefore, these karmic activities, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we realize that the law, because of the karmic activities, we undergo suffering. And whatever miseries that we get, they are simply doses to protect us from the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death, to detach us from the desire for sense enjoyment. So an intelligent person, instead of complaining, takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and takes the medicine of the Holy Name with faith. This faith is very important. We have to have that faith, Srila Prabhupada says. Otherwise we'll always not be sure and will be in anxiety. In fact, devotional life starts with faith. Now this faith can mold the way we behave. Our attitudes can change because of having faith or because of lack of having faith. There's a very interesting example again here. This example is of serving prasadam during festival programs. In festival programs, there are some people who serve prasadam and they see that the queue is never ending. And then we have samosas, we have cakes, we have jagannath tang. Then we have, you know, so many things, paneer sabzi, puris. Puri is the cause of most anxiety. Because that is one which is made half normally. Most anxiety. And if this chapati, don't even think about it. It's a premium. So there is a long queue, and then the person is continuously serving. After some time, anxiety comes, and then the person starts serving halwa like he is serving some charanamrit. Gradually it will come like that, because there is tension inside. So what is the cure? When you see some person serving like this in a grumpy face, then all one needs to do is tell, Prabhuji, your plate is already ready. It is kept at your feet. And then the person opens and sees. And then, wow, everything is there. One halwa, one, everything is there. And then the smile comes back on the face. Haribol, Prabhu. Again, the serving starts. How are you, Prabhu? And even when people ask, what about you? Keep something for yourself also. Then we say, no, it's okay, all Vaishnava Seva. Now, what has changed this attitude? The faith that at the end of all this, my quota is already ready, available for you. You have complete faith because the mercy is right at your feet. Prasadam is kept right there. So therefore, faith can mold our attitudes. If we have the same faith in Krishna, saying that, okay, I'm going through this, all this service, but at the end of the day, Krishna is going to definitely recognize and he's going to give me residence in the spiritual world. If we have this faith, then we will go through all kinds of austerities and adversities. So, we are talking about complaining. Management is often what we complain about. The management of this is not good, management of the temple is not good. In fact, that day, I and Anirudh Prabhu were discussing something, and we were discussing that the golden rule of management is always criticized for everything. It's a thankless job. Prabhudas Prabhu can agree. Give us some more perspectives. If everything goes right, nobody thanks. But if something goes wrong, people always complain. Management. So, this management is such a thankless job that Brahma, who is the supreme manager of this material world, is also doing a thankless job. The gopis also, were dissatisfied with Brahma, saying that, why did you give us this eyelid? So Brahma also was criticized. The gopis are saying, right, because we cannot see Krishna. Even gopis criticize Brahma. So management is something which we often criticize. And even as a preacher, when we try to preach, again, we are criticized. There is, and people complain, even when we preach. So there is an example of a nice devotee who was, a nice boy who was being cultivated in Krishna consciousness. So this boy started slowly leaving meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling. He started leaving all this. He was coming in a nice manner, and he used to come every week to the temple. So his father got bewildered. He got a little bit anxious. He said, what is this here? Every week this guy is going to the temple. What kind of temple is this? So he asked his father, son, what is this in the temple? And he made some attempts to stop his son. And when the attempts failed, then one day the father accompanied the son to the temple to see those people who are preaching to him. So he met the brahmacharis of the temple. And he asked the brahmacharis, don't do this to my son. I also know all this bhakti and all that. Okay. All these things should be done when he becomes of my age. So immediately the brahmacharis told him, okay, we'll release your son, you join. And he said, I'll have to ask my wife. So next day he went and asked his wife. And I don't know what happened in the house. Next day he came and said, no, let my son stay only. So even as preachers, people complain. Even when their son is going through a good path. Because no one knows the potency of this medicine which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave 500 years ago. Now the cause for complaint is pent up anger, and the cure is in devotional service. Because when we take to devotional service, we start appreciating the austerity of Srila Prabhupada in order to help us fulfill the mission or purpose of life and to help us purify our own suffering. And we also become very forgiving when we take to this process of Krishna consciousness, and we stop complaining when we learn to forgive. It is mentioned that no relationships are possible if we don't know the art of forgiving. Forgiving others as well as ourselves. When we don't forgive ourselves, that means we are having the controller mentality. Things that, you know, I have tried so much and I should not forgive myself. So this is the second symptom. Now the third symptom, we talked about comparing, we talked about complaining. The third symptom of a conditioned mind is to criticize, to see only the bad. Now when Srila Prabhupada was in Juhu, one gentleman came, one Indian gentleman, he came there, and then he saw all the disciples of Srila Prabhupada entered the room and Prabhupada was sitting and everyone was paying obeisances. So immediately he took objection to that and he started criticizing Srila Prabhupada. How can you, you know, accept all these obeisances? People are falling at your feet and all. They should not fall at the feet, because you are only an ordinary human being. We should only fall at the feet of God. So Srila Prabhupada told him, it's not that they don't know anything, you don't know. Prabhupada told him, you don't know what is Vedic culture. That's why you don't know what they are doing. Because it's because of your ignorance. Your mind is giving you some suggestions. You don't have the knowledge by which your mind can tell you what is right and what is wrong. So this tendency, so criticism can come because we are cultivating the habit of seeing only bad everywhere. So even when he saw Srila Prabhupada and even when he saw the disciples paying obeisances, he was only seeing something bad in that whole thing. Sometimes we see, instead of seeing bad, we graduate a little bit and we start seeing both good as well as the bad. But at the end we select only the bad. No, everything is good about this Mataji. But still, you know, this is not good. Still, we conclude only with the bad. Or worse is, we see little bad and we magnify that bad. So these are the things which lead to criticism. Either seeing only the bad, seeing both the good and the bad, but selecting the bad, or seeing little bad and magnifying that bad. This comes because of false pride. The tendency to criticize comes because of false pride. Because we think that we are better than others and we know that our thought is correct. And the effect of criticism is discouragement and offenses which lead to a fall down. So Srila Prabhupada warned us constantly about the impact of offenses through the example of Daksha Yagya. How Daksha insulted Lord Shiva and how he had to suffer thereafter. So the cure for criticism is only humility. Glorify Krishna and the devotees and have proper understanding of what facility has been given to us in this life. Only when we have this kind of an appreciation, we can develop this humility, can we overcome the tendency to criticize. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us to see little good and magnify it. As we said earlier, you can see only the bad, or we can see both the good and the bad and select the bad. We can see the little bad and magnify it, or we can see the little good and magnify that. We have seen a live example. Kripa Sindhu Prabhu was here. Kripa Sindhu Prabhu had this, you know, amazing ability. He'll see the little good in people and then he'll magnify it. Prabhuji, wonderful Prabhu, he'll say. Person will come after 2 years to the temple. But still, you know, he'll first start with that. Prabhuji, you're coming so wonderfully from so far off. He'll not say, why you're coming after 2 years? No. So this is what Srimad Bhagavatam teaches, that we see the little good and then magnify that good. So Maharaj Parikshit, example is given, he forgave Kali. Despite all the problems of Kali, immediately Maharaj Parikshit forgave Kali because he saw the one good quality in Kali Yuga. that whatever good we think of in our minds for people, we get good results for that. If we think good even in the mind for people, we get the good reactions for that. And whatever bad we think for people in the mind, as long as we don't actionize it, we don't get bad reactions. This is the beauty of Kali Yuga. And Maharaj Parikshit saw this quality in Kali Yuga. And this is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Text 7, where it says, Nanu Dveshti Kalim Samrat Saranga Iva Sarabhuk Kusalani Asu Siddhyanti Netarani Kritaniyat. Maharaj Parikshit was a realist, like the bees who only accept the essence of a flower. He knew perfectly well that in this age of Kali, auspicious things produce good effects immediately, whereas inauspicious acts must be actually performed to render effects. So he was never envious of the personality of Kali. So we have this facility in this day and age to chant Hare Krishna. And in this verse it is mentioned that chanting Hare Krishna is the ultimate cure. And this medicine, if taken on a regular basis, can get rid of these contaminations and help us become purified and develop peace of mind. So chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the only cure in Kali Yuga if we want genuine peace of mind. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Today is the first time that I've ended my class at 9 o'clock. Any questions or comments? In one of Radhesham Prabhu's books, Radhesham Prabhu, as I mentioned earlier, is the president of ISKCON Pune Temple, who I was talking about, you know, he's a gold medalist and all, same personality. He has written a book called as Essence of the Bhagavad Gita. In the Essence of the Bhagavad Gita, he has said that our advancement in Krishna consciousness is not only known by our sadhana, that we are chanting 16 rounds. He has said that bhakti has got three levers. Three levers are sadhana, seva and sadachar. All these three things are required. Our chanting also has to be of good quality. But after chanting, there has to be active service also. And having done sadhana and seva, there has to be good behavior also. So these are, all these three things are required. And also it is mentioned that the quality of chanting will only improve if our chanting is accompanied by constant hearing from spiritual master. Because spiritual master not only gives us instruction to chant, but he gives us so many other instructions which actually help us improve our quality of chanting. In the Japa reform book, His Holiness Satswarup Das Maharaj, he mentioned, when will I stop the process of finishing my rounds and when will I start chanting? Like that. So he mentions that we have a tendency to only finish our rounds. So when will we finish? When will our mind stop this tendency and tell us, now you start chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra? The other extreme is, Rupa Goswami. Was it Rupa Goswami who said? How many? I desire millions of tongues. Who said that? Sanatana Goswami said that. Yeah? Okay. I desire millions of tongues and ears. What is this mantra that you have given me? I desire millions of tongues and ears. So, what I have heard from senior devotees is that chanting should be accompanied with nityam hearing. That's why shravanam kirtanam Vishnu smaranam is given. Otherwise it would have only been mentioned kirtanam. I don't know. Is that fine? Anything you want to add to?
I love the title of chanting Hare Krishna. It reminds me of that. I remember the supermarket, there's always music going on in the background. There's this called music. So when you're in the supermarket, you're not aware of it. I'm playing some balls in music. So sometimes when we're chanting Hare Krishna, the jap is going on in the background. The mind is coming alive to the universe. So even though one sits, we are hearing it, we're not really paying attention to it. So it's going on in the background.
Pardon, please?
We won't achieve a platform where we can speak in anxiety.
Yes.
We'll just be transferring material anxiety to Krishna. And we'll be anxious for Krishna. And we'll be in Krishna anxiety. And a couple of these are like the embodiment of Krishna anxiety, always anxious to get Krishna in Krishna.
In fact, I was having a chat with Goparindesh Prabhu the other day, and I was telling him that I'm not able to chant attentively, so what is the cure? And Gopavindesh Prabhu told me an interesting point. He told me that what the mind thinks during chanting is what you actually do, what activities you are involved in throughout, and that activity will simply manifest in your thoughts when you chant the holy name. So he said that therefore we'll have to change our activities. If we have a regular sadhana of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, if we have a very intense devotional program, then our mind is always thinking of it even when we are not chanting. So the mind will think of that what we have been doing before you sit for chanting. So if we fill our whole time with all these things, then the mind will definitely go and dwell on the same things, on Krishna only. So this is what told me, and it made a lot of sense to me actually. It's very simple in one sense, but it is still complicated. It's not easy to do.
You were saying sadhana, seva, sadhacha. Why seva is important?
Why seva is important is given in Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is mentioned, Shushusho Shraddha Dhanasya Vasudeva Katharuchi Syan Mahat Sevaya Vipra Punya Tirtha Nishevanath. So it is mentioned that, and this is in Narad Muni's pastime, it is mentioned that unless we do service, then we will not get the taste for hearing Vasudeva Katha. And unless we don't hear Vasudeva Katha, then we have nothing to meditate when we are chanting on. Because when we chant, we hear the holy name, and then as we advance, we need to meditate on the pastimes of the Lord. That is where service is important. That's my understanding. Srila Prabhupada says that. I also do all the three. Actually, I'm not qualified to speak on this. Yeah.
Even in spiritual life, when we maybe compare, we get a better result. Or when we comply with the management, or we can redefine this process of activities.
Yeah.
We get it in a better way.
Yeah.
So even though you should not do it in the first place, if you make a positive critique or we give a useful complaint, that can help us in.
Yes, that's a good point. That's a good point. And in fact, in the temple now, we have this meetings which we have on Saturday, where there is where we are discussing lot of issues which people are facing. So the whole idea is that if there is a forum where we can voice our concerns, then the tendency of the individual is not to talk behind the scenes. That is one. Okay, so If a forum is provided for that, then in that forum people can voice their concerns, right? And from the person who is complaining, it is mentioned that that everything is at the end of the day, what is the intention behind that? If the intention is getting personal with the person about who you are complaining, rather than looking at what is going wrong, looking at who is doing wrong. And because many times when we complain, the problem may still be there, but our intention is not to solve the problem. Our intention is to pull the other person down, like that. So it is all based upon, you know, with what attitude we carry, and whether we are complaining to genuinely improve the system and we want to get rid of our miseries, or it is just lamentation, or the idea is to pull down the other person. So complaining is a double-edged sword. No? It can, if complaining is done in the right mood, that's why, you know, we have sometimes called as, you know, grievance cell. If there are any grievance, then we go and address that grievance in a particular manner with senior authorities, rather than going outside the temple or discussing in the courtyard. Oh, this temple is like this. No, what is it? So many times we have seen, you know, even after a few years in Krishna consciousness, we have seen devotees who stand in the courtyard and who complain about things not happening properly in this temple, like that. So the proper procedure, if you have a disillusionment with the temple, then we have senior authorities who are there. Prabhu is there. We have Anirudh Prabhu. The proper procedure is to go to them and discuss, saying that, okay, this is the problem that is there. Can you do something about it? Like that. So seeing room for improvement is not a problem. If genuinely, you know, our desire is, you know, we have to have this ownership that this is our temple. It's not that we have to see it from an outsider's perspective, saying that, oh, this temple has got so many problems. Like in our house, if something is leaking, we'll not complain, oh, this house is very bad. We'll try and do something to fix that. So unless we have the ownership that this is our own temple, and I also have equal responsibility to correct something which is wrong in this temple, till that time we'll always sit on the periphery and then, you know, pass judgments. And that is what is called as conscience keepers. We'll always remain as conscience keepers in our life, telling everybody, you know, this, I'm disillusioned with this, disillusioned with that. In fact, in one recent lecture I heard, that the beauty about ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON, is that there are many institutions which are performing so-called, you know, spiritual guidance. Many institutions are giving so-called spiritual guidance to people. There are many temples. If you see Swami Narayan temple or some other temple, for example, their temples may slightly look even more beautiful than our temple. Or if you go to some other temple, that temple may, their hundi collection will be much, much greater than our temple. Their temple may have a nice gopuram. You know what's a gopuram? Gopuram means that, you know, in Indian temples we have the triangle. So they may have all that, and our temple will just look like a, you know, Australian, what is that called? Just one of the buildings, right? Somebody said, in fact, when we were preaching to someone, he said, your temple doesn't look like a temple. It looks like just a building. Temple means we should have gopuram, and some demigod should be there on top. Some brass thing should be there, you know, like that. So, there was a very interesting point which I heard in one of the lectures. They said, don't think that within ISKCON there will be no problems. In ISKCON, ISKCON is a hospital. In this hospital, when you enter the hospital, you will find that the receptionist may be missing. Right? Many people complain, I went to member services, nobody was there, or I went to reception, nobody was there. Obviously, no, somebody cannot sit 24 hours over there. So people sometimes lose their patience. No? They want immediately things like that. So we have to understand that in ISKCON, again, we are all human beings, again, we are all fallible, our systems may not be very perfect. So the systems, you know, the receptionist may not be there, or when you come, the prasadam sometimes may be too spicy, correct? So many problems will be there. But in this hospital of ISKCON, there is one good quality, that the medicine works. The medicine which we give in this hospital works. Rather than you go to some other place where the receptionist is beautifully smiling, you are welcomed very nicely, namaste, no, like that, no, very nicely dressed person is there, very opulent, everything is there, bed is there, no, there is nice cottage they will provide, these temples, but the medicine will not work at the end of the day. So our medicine is bona fide, as, you know, mentioned in this purport, our process is 100% sure, it will take you back to Godhead. So therefore, we have to understand whether we want to go to a hospital where the medicine works, or we want to go to a hospital based on the externals, but the medicine is the only thing which will not work. Like that. Yes.
So he spoke about complaining and criticizing.
So if we are not doing this, so what will be our positive engagement? What should be our positive engagement?
Srila Prabhupada says that the positive engagement is to take up devotional service. There's nothing else. This is what we have heard since time immemorial. Since we all became devotees, Srila Prabhupada keeps on hammering this point. That take up devotional service. In fact, Muralidhar Prabhu was giving me a very good example one day. He said that if a glass is there, for example, if this glass is there, this glass is now, you can't see it, but I can see it from here. This glass is full till here. And there is some space on top. Right? Now, in this space, because this space is on top, I can take this jug and pour as much water in this jug as much as this glass is empty. Right? But the moment I start pouring and the water reaches this particular level, then if I pour anything more, it's going to just flow out. This cannot accommodate anything more. So, this glass is nothing like our mind. So, to the extent that our mind, body and our senses are engaged in Krishna consciousness, to that extent, Maya will not come and sit. So, fill up this glass, fill up the entire day with Krishna conscious activities, so there is no space for Maya to come and sit inside. Maya usually attacks when we are free. Then we start thinking about complaining or criticizing. If we are already under stress, Prabhu, I have to go 7:30, offering is there. No, if you are running around serving Krishna all the time, there is no time to criticize or compare. Prabhu, one minute, I am busy right now. Like that. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada, you can see the schedule of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, there was no jet lag. Prabhupada, even if he has, arrives in the morning, he'll go for Mangala Arati. Even if, actually it is supposed to be night time for him, as per his own jet lag. So the whole life, every moment Srila Prabhupada was doing something or the other. To my understanding, that is the only method. Fill the life with Krishna consciousness.
Prabhu.
Activities, yeah.
When we go to a temple, we can aspire health, somebody will say. But we can't aspire any health. Only, nothing is there for me, only Hare Krishna, something like that. We are not aspiring any health or wealth, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Only this, I don't want anything, it is better or to... Like, I will give an example. In an organization, employer and employee will be there.
Yes.
This employee will be chanting something devotional part. He will be traveling a bit more than that his employer. So the comparison between this employee can aspire for a better position or you do this, this mantra or whatever it is. Even by doing mantra also, you can aspire a better position. When we go to a temple, we can somebody will be asking for some wealth or so like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So better we should not ask anything. Simply we should be in love with that Hare Krishna.
Okay.
Please.
So devotees can be at various stages of purity. One can be a neophyte devotee who has just started adopting the process of Krishna consciousness, or one can be a pure devotee like the six Goswamis whose picture you see behind. They are pure devotees, okay, who had no desire. So Srila Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion says the definition of pure devotional life. He says, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anukulena Krishna Anusilanam Bhakti Ruttama. So, Srila Rupa Goswami says that pure devotion, which is 100% devoid of any tinge of material desire, where the only desire is satisfaction of Krishna. Na janam, na dhanam, na sundarim, kavitam va jagadisha kamaya. I don't want any money, I don't want wealth, nor do I want beauty, nor do I want any number of followers. That is the highest standard of bhakti. Okay, but we cannot come to that highest standard of bhakti in one day. Most of us cannot come. In one single day. Therefore, when a person enters Krishna consciousness, gradually by the process of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, if our material desires are 100, okay, and our spiritual desire is 0, what happens? The spiritual desire becomes 10. And now what happens to the material desire? It becomes 90. Then, again, as we continue chanting, spiritual desires becomes 20 and material desires become 80%. So like that process happens. So if you catch a devotee in between somewhere, you will find that a devotee is very nicely, 60% he is very spiritual, but 40% he is still wants to have a car or something like that. So Lord Krishna says that is not a problem. Material desires is definitely, if we have even one tinge of material desire, we cannot go back to the spiritual world. But if we have material desires, if you see a devotee who has material desires as well as who is chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we don't look down upon that devotee, or we don't start saying that, "Are, what kind of devotee is this? He is having all material desires." We don't say that. Because though that person is having cancer, cancer is material desires, he is having the cancer of material desires, but still that person is undergoing chemotherapy treatment. Eventually he will get rid of that cancer. Right? So if you see devotees in various life cycle stages in their Krishna consciousness, you will find, you know, all kinds of devotees. Devotees who are 20% Krishna conscious, 80% material desires. You will see another devotee who is 90% Krishna consciousness, but just, you know, he's got a small attachment to Rasgulla. But otherwise, perfect sadhana, everything wonderful. Like that. So you will find devotees, you know, at various, you know, stages in the life cycle. Also, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord says that even if you have material desires, this is for not for pure devotees. Lord Krishna is saying, I know all you people are not pure devotees. Therefore, even if you have material desires, he says, don't go to the demigods and devatas. Come to me. Simple example I give you. If my son is sitting here, if my son has got 20 rupees in his pocket, okay, and my son goes to the cigarette shop, okay, and he has 20 rupees, he gives it to the cigarette fellow. He says, okay, give me, please give me the cigarette to smoke. Okay. Then what will the shopkeeper do? He will say, okay, the cigarette is 15 rupees. Now he has got 20 rupees. So he is paying him. He obviously he can afford it. And he will give that cigarette to my son. Then next day, the cigarette is over. So then my son is coming to me now. I am his father. He says, daddy, 20 rupees, cigarette. What will he get? What will he get? What will you do? I'll give one slap across his cheek. Now, of course, that is the Indian way. In India, you don't have 911 facility. Okay, I'll give one slap. And tell him, what? You're asking cigarette to your father? So what I'll do is, I'll try and remove that desire from his mind. So therefore, it is said that if you have material desires, and if you go to the demigods, what they will do, they are like the teller in the bank. The teller, what he does, if you go and present a self-check, what the teller will do? The teller will see, okay, this guy has got money in his account or no? Yes, he has got money. So he will give you the cash. You don't fall at the feet of the teller saying that how charitable you are. Dear teller, you have given me money when I asked. No, he is giving it to you from your own karmic bank account. That's all. So therefore, if you go to demigods with material desires, your desire may get fulfilled, but then it may not be good for you. Just like his desire for cigarette got fulfilled, but is cigarette good for him? No. But when he came to the genuine authority, who is his father, our supreme father, who is Lord Krishna, when we go to Lord Krishna, he will fulfill your material desires only if they are good for you in the long run, or he will fulfill your material desires in such a way that you will never, you know, have that desire again, like that. So he will give you a spiritual solution to a material problem. Demigods will only give you material solution to material problem. So therefore the results which are given by the demigods, the devatas, they are temporary in nature. Whereas the results which are offered by going with the same problem to a higher authority, they are different in the long run for us. Is this clear? Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, jai Nitai Gaur Prabhu.